The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Let's talk about disinformation right now, because there is a huge amount of it out there. And we look at social media and we wonder why it is as it is. And I have to say, the disinformation slot on this particular programme is an interesting one, because it brings to light all the things that are going on. David Robert Grimes, author and disinformation expert, is with us now. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
TikTok, EU election misinformation. A lot of younger people get their news from TikTok. They were talking about it on breakfast this morning, and they were getting an awful lot of guff, weren't they?
Well, absolutely. And look, that's been a pattern that's been shifting for many, many years. Even back in 2016, millennials, which are people born from 1982 up to the mid-1990s, over 70% of us, and I happen to be one of them, get their news from social media. And that's increasingly becoming a factor with the younger generation and Generation Z on things like TikTok. So it's a prime place for malicious actors to put out things that mightn't be checked by audience that maybe lack some media literacy or don't know about the fact they're being manipulated.
Now, TikTok are trying to say they did something about it. So what did they do?
Well, this is interesting. They claim they removed 43,000 pieces of EU election misinformation. And they claim that most of these were not viewed by anyone, that their algorithms were able to catch them instantaneously. And they claim that most of these bits of misinformation were about immigration, for the most part. Of course, obviously designed to stoke up tensions. However, while they're patting themselves on the back, independent investigations have found that doesn't appear to be the case. For example, there was another outlet who ran a series of deliberate misinformation in adverts, of which all were approved by TikTok. They later claimed that was human error, that their system had detected it.
They took the money, didn't they? Yeah.
They would say that, wouldn't they? But, but here's the thing that we have to get back onto focus, right? Social media companies exist to make money. And advertisements is what they sell. They sell engagement to get advertisers in. So there is a perverse incentive, and we've talked about this in a segment before. You can't expect social media companies to regulate themselves, because they will do things like TikTok just did. They will say, oh, we did all this, but you can never prove it, because you're relying on them to self-regulate. And we've seen, sadly, historically, that you can't trust social media companies to self-regulate.
Yeah.
It's not in their interest to do so.
And the funny thing is, TikTok at least are trying to do something about it. If you look at X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, I mean, they've just thrown the towel in altogether. They are not moderating anything unless it's community moderated. One example that really stood out for me yesterday was the video of the Russian missile strike on the Ukrainian Children's Hospital that was verified by multiple media outlets, including Bellingcat. And when you linked to Bellingcat's website, X gave you a warning that the website wasn't safe. And I'm going, what are you doing?
So X, the artist, as you say, the artist formerly known as Twitter, has become a fiefdom of Elon Musk, because, I mean, I would argue he's very fragile ego and possibly anything else. But the problem is, it was already bad. I mean, people, long-term users, remember, it was already bad for falsehoods perpetuating. It got a lot worse since they fired the community moderation team, which just shows that they had an absolute contempt for it. And we'd spoken this segment a few weeks about the fact that EU central figures are trying to warn X that they have to abide by EU regulations on information, and they have no interest in doing so. They're just particularly brazen, and that's partly due to the personality of Elon Musk. They're particularly brazen and quite partisan. I mean, you do have a strange situation where Twitter is owned essentially by Elon Musk, who constantly perpetuates misinformation himself. He's very Trumpian in the way he does so. And I mean, any pretense of them pretending to care about content moderation went out the window around then.
Yeah, well, and don't forget, the same guy is allowing bots with pornography to absolutely overrun the site at the moment. So, you know, that gives you an indication of where his brain is at. And speaking of bots, occasionally they get discovered and they get uncovered. And there was a real concerted effort that the Americans went to identify accounts pretending to be a good old-fashioned mom and pop American. And turns out they were lads in Stalingrad making stuff up.
Now, this is actually even more interesting, right? Because that's kind of an old playbook. There are called troll factories out in Russia and St. Petersburg, where they have armies of people literally posting content all day, pretending to be American or pretending to be European. And we saw it in our recent thing that a lot of the anti-immigrant sentiment in Ireland was coming from non-Irish accounts. And that's not unusual. What's unusual in this instance, so the State Departments in the US have identified 968 accounts, which is a relatively smaller number, but this is the tip of the iceberg, that aren't only bots, they're using AI-generated content. So instead of having someone in a factory in St. Petersburg, it is now using things like ChatGPT to say, you know, anti-Ukrainian stuff or anti-Biden stuff and to make it look organic. Now, what really is scary about that is this is probably inevitable with AI and how it's taken over, but that makes the process of creating disinformation just that much easier for malicious actors. Because now instead of having to hire someone, you've just trained a bot to go and do it, and they do it at a passable level that people think it's real. And that is truly scary. So they've identified these accounts. These are the tip of the iceberg. And this was actually an idea that was launched by a previous deputy director of Russia Today, RT, the network that is outlawed in many places at the moment. So this shows you this is very concerted as well.
Yeah, and when you look at this, I mean, the solution to AI, ironically, is more AI. But if the social media companies don't deploy that AI, then you can put up whatever the hell you like.
Absolutely. And look, the reality of this is that social media companies have very little interest in regulating it. They have a big interest in pretending to regulate it and to sit there and pretend they're doing something and saying they're being proactive. But ultimately, they are only answerable to their shareholders. And
but they were all developed by free speech Puritans, people who believe you could say anything and it's protected by the First Amendment in the United States and blah, 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 blah.
But tech libertarians, ultimately, absolutely.
Yeah, and like they have done the world a massive disservice by their I'm going to say, rather hippie-ish approach.
And almost, but it's a strange thing. Like they talk about freedom of speech. And they don't seem to realize that that doesn't mean freedom from the consequences of speech, which is kind of what they're looking for. So, for example, I mean, the old analogy is if you run into a crowded theater and yell fire, you know, you're not really exercising your free speech. You're inciting panic falsely, obviously, in this instance. And that we still haven't, we're still blurry on those boundaries. We seem to think that this is like an information marketplace. And this is like the Zuckerberg model where you'll go out there and we'll just be able to identify the best information and pick it. But that's not how it works. Information that's emotive, scary, that aims at our biases, has a disproportionate weight on us due to a rake of psychological factors. And the idea that we could just be independent arbiters, and this is why real media organizations had such an important role, because actually there was fact-checking, or there was an attempt to separate opinion from informative, from analysis. And unfortunately in social media, those boundaries go. And the most emotive, the most shocking content is really what engages, because at the end of the day, we are, you know, as I say in my own book, irrational apes, that this is how it works on us. And that's really scary.
Yeah. David, tell me about this letter in The Lancet and why it's causing so much upset.
Right. So changing gears a little bit here. There was a letter in The Lancet earlier, at the end of last week, that tried to estimate the number of deaths in Gaza so far during the conflict. And this is really important to do because, again, it's to try and estimate how much resources are needed and what's actually going on the ground. We know, and the way the authors of a letter proceeded was they took the actual number of confirmed direct deaths, which is around up to the 19th of June was 37,400-ish. And they pointed out that in war, direct deaths only are a portion of all deaths. More people die due to famine, due to injury, illness, disease, everything else caused by that. And usually that's a factor of 3 to 15 times. And taking a conservative estimate of fourfold, they estimated that that could mean a real figure of around 180,000. With the caveat that is an estimate and it is conservative. Now, the reaction to that was polarized. Some people immediately jumped in and said The Lancet had published this figure and done the research. Well, it is an estimate, to be fair. It's a reasonable estimate. And on the other side of a coin, you had people who are very pro-Israel or pro-the war saying that this was propaganda. This was, and in some cases, I think the Jerusalem Post yesterday called it blood libel, trying to implicate that it was anti-Semitic, which I think is very unfair in this instance. The reality is it's an estimate and with a reasonable methodology. But again, that is not how it's interpreted. Again, the Lancet editors would have selected this. They would have vetted it. That doesn't mean it's gospel truth. The letter authors even say they don't know. But
it's
an
a bit rich, though, of anyone who's completely and utterly dismissing it, because Israel won't let any foreign media into Gaza so that they could carry out any kind of independent or any NGO external to Gaza to go in there and carry out a meaningful assessment. So, I mean, we are living in a world of mistruth and misinformation. Calling it a blood libel is...
It is ridiculous. And look, there is serious problems, and I've talked about this a lot before, that of course anti-Semitism is a huge problem around the world, but that doesn't, and this, you have to separate the state of Israel from, you know, Judaism. They're separate things. In this case, you can criticize the actions of Israel without it being a blood libel or to go back that way. And this is, the Jerusalem Post is being, I mean, it's hyperbole to dismiss the real thing here, but you're right. People have to estimate because we're not allowed on the ground. And we have to go with this. And this extrapolation, the letter, it's very, you know, it's very basic, but it's a reasonable thing to think about. And
well, truth is the first casualty of war, and the old adage says, and I think you're proving the point with that letter. David Robert Grimes, author and disinformation expert, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much to this. We are getting ever closer to giving this amount of money away.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.